Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, so the Texans have now, Seth, officially, unofficially, gotten two head coaches and two general managers fired. Their own head coach and general manager, Bill O'Brien and William O'Brien, both fired. Both of those guys were fired after week four.
It was a bloody Monday.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it a Monday we found out?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it was a Monday after the Minnesota game. So Bill O'Brien and William O'Brien both fired when the Texans started out 0-4, and then the Texans they got things straightened out, and they've gone 4-3 over the last seven games, and the fourth win in that sequence was on Thursday against the Detroit Lions, and the Detroit Lions on Saturday fired Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn. So the Texans players can go ahead and put another notch on their head coach and general manager bedpost of fired people. They got Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn fired. And Seth, I like to think that the moment that the Lions brass all looked at each other and said, it's time, was the flea flicker that made it 41-17. Like they look at each other, they go, okay, this is just not working out right now with this guy.
You know what? There's something to be said for that, because I think that when Kubiak got fired from the Texans, it wasn't just losing to the Jaguars. It was the fashion in which they lost, where there were multiple breakdowns in discipline. You know, DJ Swearinger almost single-handedly got Gary Kubiak fired,
because
he just had a meltdown in that game.
He was acting like a maniac. Yeah.
So I think that does matter, whether it's emotional or the optics of it all. It just gets to a point where you say, well, this is headed towards clown show territory, and you got to make a change. It did feel that way. And Detroit fans, by the way, are very grateful to Deshaun Watson. They've been donating to his charity.
Tell this.
We'll talk about that. We can talk about during headlines, but we probably won't get to it. So let me find this real quick. So Detroit fans, who have obviously wanted Patricia out since probably 3 weeks after they met him.
And by weeks, you mean hours, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they're grateful to Deshaun Watson and the Texans for finally showing them the door. So Lions fans donate to Deshaun Watson's charity in droves after a Texans win. I got to tell you, honestly, Sean, I was a little disappointed, because immediately what I thought of was, after Andy Dalton won a game that sent the Bills to the playoffs,
yeah,
Bills fans were very grateful to Dalton and the Bengals. So they donated upwards of $430,000 to Andy Dalton's charity that helps sick kids and their families with their financial distress.
Yeah.
These Lions fans, apparently not as jubilant over the firing of Matt Patricia as
Bills
fans.
So like what, $300,000, $200,000?
Hold on. I mean, there's still time, but as of 9 a.m. yesterday morning, Sean,
like $100,000, maybe
they had all banded together to total $1,070 in donations.
$1,000?
Yeah.
What, they have a penny jar or something? They go around all the convenience stores and take the little penny tray and dump it in a jar, and then here you go, Deshaun. Here, $1,000.
Many fans donated $13 for Patricia's 13 wins against 29 losses.
Okay, how about $1,300, maybe. You know what I mean? Like, come on. Now, I know the economy has hit Michigan harder than others.
Well, Sean, yeah, Thank God Deshaun signed that new contract, because he's going to match the donation. So, you know, that $1,070 without that contract extension could have damn near broken.
Okay, I am not going to – I know what you're saying, and I know you, I'm not saying you think this way, but there are people who are going to hear what you said and kind of the chuckly tone that you use there to think that we're like, well, Deshaun needs to step up more than that. Deshaun, if all Deshaun says is I'm going to match everything that Detroit fans give, and then Detroit fans only step up with $1,000, then there's nothing Deshaun can do. I'm sure if they stepped up with $50,000, he'd donate $50,000. Deshaun can't control the cheapness of people from Michigan. He can't.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I wasn't taking a shot at Deshaun at all.
I know you weren't, but I know
they're going to like that on Twitter, and then some talk show hosts up in Detroit are going
to
take me to task for it. So, Deshaun also owns that restaurant, or he's an investor in that restaurant,
Lefties. Yeah.
Up in Detroit, so this is all rolled into that somehow.
Yeah, it's a cheesesteak place. In fact, it's supposed to open in a few weeks here in Houston. I'm very anxious to go eat a cheesesteak there. So Patricia and Quinn are fired. So now, Seth, the openings. And by the way, Jacksonville fired their general manager, David Caldwell. Doug Marrone is somehow surviving this thing. My guess is he gets whacked at the end of the year. They just don't want to. They don't want to go through the hassle the last four games of putting an interim in there.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, you can start your search. And I know the Texans felt like, hey, we can start our search in earnest before the end of the season. You can't really interview anybody until the end of the season, so I don't know how much of a head start they get on it, other than maybe some of these candidates that they are allowed to interview because they're not actively with an NFL team. So I think Caldwell had been with the Jaguars long past anybody thought he should be there, which I think makes it a pretty appetizing spot for some GMs, because the Jaguars have two first-round picks, two second-round picks, I believe 13 total picks in this draft, plus they've got the most cap space in the league. So I look at the Jaguars as perhaps the most desirable destination for some general managers, where with the Texans, I look at the Texans and I think, wow, I could see where general managers might be a little nervous about not having any draft picks and not much cap space, because all of a sudden they have to do the reset for a little bit before they can even really start building. Whereas in Jacksonville, you jump right in. Now, with Houston, I think a lot of coaches would look at the two situations and say, well, one of these places has Deshaun Watson. The other one might end up with Trevor Lawrence somehow, if Trevor Lawrence basically digs in his heels and says, nope, I'm not going to the Jets. But likely is going to be harder to win more games sooner. So I think the Texans are the more desirable coaching destination.
Yeah, the one thing I would point out for people who are like, why didn't they just fire Marrone too? Seth, you brought up the name Trevor Lawrence. If you're trying to get the number one pick in the draft, would you not hang on to the head coach who's gotten you to a 1-11 record so far this season?
Yeah, I know.
God forbid you fire the head coach and you get some interim in there who gets the guys inspired enough to go 2-3 down the stretch or something like that.
Yeah, Doug Marrone, the greatest gift he can give to the city of Jacksonville at this point is to continue losing footballs. They almost messed it up this weekend, but ultimately they prevailed and lost.
Is Robert Saleh in your top three for Texans head coaching candidates?
He is.
Yeah.
He is.
Me too.
And it's the more I hear from his players and other people around him, and you know, I know him a little bit personally, it makes a whole lot of sense that Robert Saleh has a job somewhere next year.
San Francisco defensive coordinator, of course, the coordinator of the defense that got that team to the Super Bowl last year. And as Seth alluded to, a former assistant here several years ago. I think he's going to be a hot candidate. He's from Michigan. He's from the state of Michigan. So I would assume that the Detroit Lions are going to take a good hard look at him. I think the Texans will too. He's been getting some criticism this year because the defense hasn't been as good. Criticism from clowns who don't realize that half the defense has been injured. They pulled a big upset yesterday though against the Los Angeles Rams. They beat the Rams 23-20. They only gave up, the defense only gave up 13 points because the Rams scored a defensive touchdown in that game. And Richard Sherman, one of the leaders on that defense, had some, if you're a Saleh fan, this is really cool to hear from Richard Sherman after the game.
You got to give Robert Saleh an abundance of credit. You have to give him an unusual amount of credit. And I don't think he's getting enough credit, not only here, but in the league in general. You know, to have the injuries that we've had week after week after week, the setbacks week after week, we lose two D linemen in the bye week. We don't know. We have uncertainty. We lose backers throughout the week. We got guys who can't practice. Kinlaw barely got to practice on a Friday. You know, it's week after week, and he never makes an excuse. And statistically, we're still a top five defense in almost every category. You know, there are guys out there with Pro Bowlers, all pros, and never lost, never had an injury, never had any adversity, and they're not putting out a top five defense. He's not making any excuses. He's making great plans week in and week out, and we're making it happen. And I think you know, I expect him to be a head coach next year because of what he's able to do. You know, he's able to rally men. You know, he's a leader of men, and that goes a long way.
What does it mean, Seth, that it's Richard Sherman that's coming from right there?
Well, I mean, that's a double-edged sword, right? Because I think sometimes Richard Sherman will go off just to go off. I do think that Richard Sherman is a guy that is not going to falsely build somebody up, nor will he shy away from tearing somebody down, whether that's that guy's on his own team or not. So I think that I actually give a lot of credence to that specific bite right there. Although I will say that I would say they're still top 10 in most major statistical categories. They're still a top 3 passing offense. But regardless, they're way better than they should be given the fact that they're playing with a whole bunch of backups. And then I think that a lot of the things that we've talked about in saying, hey, be careful with putting too much credit on the coordinator side of things, because really it's more about when you go from coordinator to head coach, it's about delegating, it's about understanding humans and motivation and all that stuff. Salah's the guy that really checks off both, multiple categories on both sides of that ledger. If you look at, hey, coaching acumen, coordinator acumen on the left side, but then you look at like people skills, leadership ability on the right side, Salah's got both of them. He's done it as a coordinator, and he's a defensive coordinator for an offensive-minded head coach. So you know he's largely on his own there. You know, he's calling the shots. You don't have to do this game where you wonder, okay, how much of it is him versus how much of it is the offensive coordinator or the head coach. But then he also just gets gushing praise from players, from other coaches, from people that have worked with him about his ability to motivate. You know, you watch him on the sideline. You've heard him in talks. I think so far he feels like in a lot of respects the safest. And I think the biggest objection to him from a lot of people is simply that they prefer an offensive-minded head coach. I personally don't care about that. I want the best guy for the job. I don't care whether he's offensive or defensive.
Big fans of Robert Saleh on this show, no doubt about that.
The one other thing I would say, because somebody brought up a valid argument, and this is true. They said, hey, the problem with getting a defensive-minded head coach is that whenever he has a good offensive coordinator, that guy invariably gets plucked to be a head coach somewhere. My counter-argument to that would be, yes, that is a big deal unless you've got a really good quarterback.
Right.
Because for Mike Tomlin, Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll, these defensive-minded coaches, once you've got the quarterback, it's all of a sudden a whole lot easier to find competent offensive coordinators.
Yes.
And I think Salah gets that, and I think that I think he'd be just fine.
Maybe the dumbest non-criminal thing we've seen NFL players do happened over the weekend, and it severely impacted one of the games on Sunday. We have that next.
Well, I was disappointed on a couple levels in that our quarterbacks put us in this position, our quarterbacks put the league in that position. You know, we count on them to be the leaders of the team and, you know, leaders of the offense. And those guys made a mistake, and that is disappointing.
That's Vic Fangio, the head coach of the Denver Broncos, who had to endure watching a practice squad wide receiver play quarterback for his team yesterday, completed one pass all afternoon. The New Orleans Saints going to Denver, 31-3, they beat the Denver Broncos. The story behind this, if you missed it, the reason why the Broncos were playing without any quarterbacks yesterday is that Jeff Driskel went on to who's a backup quarterback, then went on to the COVID list early in the week. And it was learned that on Tuesday, the other quarterbacks, Drew Lock, their normal starter, and then their other backups, Brett Rippon, and then Blake Bortles, who's on their practice squad, my, how the mighty have fallen. They grabbed lunch and gathered in a multi-purpose room inside the field house. The four remained there for about 2 hours. During that time, they ate, conversed, and game planned for the Saints. The quarterbacks were careless at times in wearing their masks and did not wear their connection tracking devices used for contact tracing. Early Thursday morning, Driskel was told that he had tested positive for COVID. That afternoon, he was placed on the COVID list. All four quarterbacks were interviewed. None were determined to be at a high-risk close contact, but the fact that they weren't wearing their masks at various times within an unacceptable distance of Driskel all of a sudden torpedoed their quarterback room.
Right, which ended originally when the NFL interviewed them, there was no reason for concern. But then somebody who had been in the field house on Tuesday reported to team officials that there was reason to believe the quarterbacks had not been truthful about their interactions earlier in the week. So somebody, I'm guessing presumably from within the Broncos organization, was a whistleblower on this and said, hey, we've got surveillance video too. So they gave surveillance video that disproved the statements that the players had given to the NFL, and basically just they had claimed they'd been wearing masks the whole time, and it turned out they hadn't been. So they scratched all four of them.
You can say what you want about the effectiveness or ineffectiveness of masks. I know it's a very polarizing issue, you know, and so I'm not here to do that. I'm not here to espouse views on what I think masks are able or not able to do within this pandemic. If there is a rule that says you have to have masks on in the building, and if you're caught without a mask, you can't play, you are an idiot if you're not wearing a mask. Like I'm not even saying you're an idiot because you're going to catch COVID. I'm saying you're an idiot because this can happen. You can. Right. I mean, the Broncos, they're not going to make the playoffs, but they were 4-6. You know, they win that game, you're 5-6, and you're, you know, regardless, even independent of where they are in the standings, Seth, and I know you as a former player can attest to this, you're trying to win every game independent of what your record is. That's what you're trying to do every Sunday, and especially when you're the quarterbacks. I mean, Drew Locke, you're supposed to be the new face of the franchise. You can't follow a rule where you're wearing your mask around the building? You're ridiculous.
Well, and they weren't wearing their Kinexon devices, too. I would almost forgive the mask hygiene just because it's – I can't keep up with when they're allowed to wear them and when they're not. I'm presuming that inside the facility they're supposed to have them on all the time. But even if they had done that absentmindedly, just not wearing the Kinexon device seems like the simplest, easiest thing that you should definitely be doing. But because they were in on their off day, and then also there's a question as to whether they were even supposed to be gathering on their off day, which is probably why they're – It's a damn shame that they were doing something positive and they botched it by being careless, which is really where it all falls back on Vic Fangio as the head coach, right? And Fangio's been fined for not wearing his mask properly earlier in the season. It's one of those things where if you looked at an NCAA program, you would say, well, they're not taking care to create organizational control.
Yeah.
So we got to hold them culpable. So it ends up looking bad for Fangio.
You're right, and he's already probably, I would imagine, on the hot seat, you know, with a young quarterback in his second year who's not progressing. Eric Bieniemy could be out there for them. Bieniemy went to Colorado. He would seem to be a logical candidate for the Broncos. Kareem Jackson met with the media following the game. He's one of the, of course, former Texan Kareem Jackson, one of the leaders on the Denver defense. Here's what Kareem Jackson had to say about the NFL's handling of this situation.
I'm not really disappointed in, you know, our guys, you know, the quarterbacks. I mean, I know the protocols have picked up a little bit. And wearing that mask in the meeting room, you know, on a day-to-day basis definitely, you know, become irritating, you know. But obviously we got to do what we have to do, you know. But at the same time, I just feel like going into the game, we wasn't given a chance. Like I said, early in the year, we had a game get pushed back, you know, a bye week taken. And, you know, to have to continue to play this game and you know, not being given a chance to at least, you know, figure things out as far as our quarterback situation, you know, that was definitely disappointing.
My response to Kareem Jackson would be take it up with your teammates. Don't take it up with the league. I think the league's been pretty clear on this. They're going to try to accommodate teams that catch the coronavirus as best they can. If you're flouting the rules, though, like if and the Tennessee Titans notwithstanding, I mean, I know they got punished, but I think back when they got pinched, they were having workouts. I thought they should have punished the Titans harder than they did. But if it's because of something like this, just complete gross negligence, just basically throwing your middle finger up at the rules, then the NFL's going to be like, sorry, man, too bad, so sad. Take it up with Drew Locke and the rest of the dudes in that quarterback room.
Yeah, and I guess the difference would be with the Ravens this time around was the Ravens actually had a whole bunch of positive cases.
Right.
Like the actual COVID test positive, not just the social distancing problems. And I don't think that they were found to have violated any of the rules yet, unless I missed one of the reports
just
from
that,
the Ravens.
Just the strength
coach.
Oh, that's
the strength coach. That's right. But I don't know how much that guy was tied to everybody else, but it seems like it's hard not to think that the relevance of the teams didn't have at least a little something to do with this. I don't know if the Ravens were going to be without Lamar Jackson. Well, they're still going to be without Lamar Jackson, too. They just had too many total numbers, whereas this was one position, and all you had to do was substitute one player, even though it was a quarterback. Yeah, I'm not gonna scream conspiracy on this. I think this was more about the fact that the Broncos could still field a team. They didn't have as many total players with COVID itself, and that the schedule, it was more advantageous to push back the Ravens because they happened to have a Thursday night game. It just kind of worked out that way.
Yeah. Was part of you think? I know part of me was thinking, Seth, as I'm watching the Broncos try to get a practice squad wide receiver ready to play quarterback in an NFL game. There's part of me going, you know what? I think Bill O'Brien would have actually enjoyed the challenge of coaching the Denver Broncos on Sunday. That he did some of his best work when backed into situation. Now, not necessarily a situation where you're starting a receiver. This would have been like O'Brien having to coach up Cecil Shorts to play quarterback in a game. Like,
yeah.
He was actually able to pluck quarterbacks off the waiver wire because they didn't have to go through COVID testing to get into the building back in 2015. But I feel like this would have appealed to O'Brien's, you know, Sudoku puzzle type of nature that he always seemed to like.
I don't even know that it appeals to a certain nature in a good way. I think what happened when O'Brien had to scramble like that was that it stripped him of some of his self-defeating tendencies, which are this need for control and meticulous planning and whatnot, to the point where it just felt a lot of the time like O'Brien is trying way too hard to make simple things complicated. So when all of a sudden you throw him into a situation where it's like, look, we got to simplify and we got to just throw Case Keenum out of there, we'll take him out of a deer stand and put him out there and do whatever the heck we can to get it done, then in those situations where you stripped him of all his best laid plans, yeah, I thought maybe then you saw the better part of him. I might argue the same thing happened to Tim Kelly a couple weeks ago when all of a sudden his Randall Cobb got injured and you had to go to a heavy tight end package, that maybe in some respects you started going from your gut more than from your brain. And sometimes that's not a bad thing. You got to find a balance. And I think with O'Brien, it's just always felt like there was just way too much of trying to find the perfect play every single time, when I'd prefer it to be a little bit more of a balance of execution versus finding the perfect play.
If you're just getting caught up on what the schedule shuffling has been, the Ravens game over the weekend did get pushed to Tuesday, so we get Tuesday Night Football tomorrow, Ravens and the Steelers. Lamar Jackson won't play in that game. He's not just contact trace. He has tested positive for COVID. So it'll be Robert Griffin III, presumably starting at quarterback for the Ravens against the undefeated Steelers tomorrow. The Ravens-Cowboys game, which was set for Thursday, has been pushed to Monday, December 7th. So
yeah,
a little shuffling.
The whole thing about all the – because I see a whole lot of people complaining about the NFL kind of for being too ticky-tack with some of these fines and whatnot. I would say the same thing that we said with the NBA. Look, when the strategy seems to be working, and the overriding strategy is to be as meticulous as possible and leave no stone unturned and be super, super careful and vigilant, then yeah, part of it that goes along with that is coming down hard whenever there are little minute violations or large ones, like sneaking a security worker into your room. That's just what you have to do. I mean, that's how you maintain control over everything, because all these little things add up. And I know it's really easy to say, they play football on Sunday, but then they can't be around each other. Yeah, because what you're trying to do is minimize the total amount of time that they might be exposed to a heavier dose of the virus. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And all these little things add up. Frankly, if you can't accept and understand that strategy, then I question your spending and saving habits financially.
Okay.
Because you haven't learned about how the value of small adds up over time.
Take that. All right. We'll do headlines in the next segment. Also, the resurgence of one particular Texan that I would think would look pretty good to a prospective head coach and general manager of this team. That's next.
And Stafford is going to throw it. Pumps, and there's pressure, and Reed has him wrapped up, and Stafford throws it down at the last moment trying to kill it, but Reed gets the sack from the 34-yard line, 4th and 1. Backs in and out. Stafford hands off to the fullback, and he's not going to get there. Let's see what the spot is. He's not going to get there.
That was Justin Reed making that second play in that sequence as well. Justin Reed, second sack in 2 games. He had not had a sack in his career up to that point, and then he got the Lions to turn it over on downs, tackling the fullback in the backfield. Seth, Justin Reed's stat line the last 2 weeks, 17 tackles, 4 TFLs, 2 sacks, 4 QB hits, and he's played 97% of the snaps. I think it's indicative of maybe a more aggressive approach from Anthony Weaver with blitzing and using the safeties. And specific to Justin Reed, certainly it's indicative of a different way that they've been using him, more in the box, more up close to the line of scrimmage. The bottom line is that as the Texans are trying to gussy themselves up for this beauty contest that is the head coach and GM search, Justin Reed getting back to being the guy that he showed he could be at times his first 2 years in the league, I think could be a really, really nice development for this team.
Yeah, if you start looking at, okay, where are their playmakers on the team? You always want to have at least one playmaker at each level of the defense. Lonnie Johnson and Bradley Roby. You know, Bradley Roby has been playing good football when he's been healthy. But I think that moving forward, if Justin Reed can continue to be more of a playmaker, not just a guy that makes some nice plays on the ball at times and is nice and steady, yeah, that can go a long way. I think that Zach Cunningham over these last few weeks has cleaned a few things up with his game. I hope that with a new coach coming in, especially if it's Robert Saleh, oh boy. Boy, that can make a big difference if Robert Saleh's the head coach. Even if he's not the defensive coordinator, he's obviously going to care a whole lot about it. Then we might really, really genuinely get the most out of Zach Cunningham. And Zach's going to want to prove himself to a new coach. The defensive line, I guess, would be the big question mark, because there are, you know, Ross Blacklock still continues to look like a rookie. We're starting to see a little bit out of Grenard. And we just don't know what's going to happen with JJ or where he'll be next year, what he's going to be like.
Yeah, I wonder if, boy, you bring up Robert Saleh. I wonder if he would be inclined to keep Anthony Weaver as the defensive coordinator. Weaver was a player on the Texans when Saleh was a coach, was he not?
Yeah, that would be a good conversation for them to have, right? I mean, and this is where Weaver's going to get a whole lot of room. I mean, people, when judging Weaver's performances here outside of Houston, are going to look at it and say, wow, you didn't really have much to work with. So let's see, how did you improve as the season went along? And I think if in the second half of the season they continue on this trajectory where they've righted a lot of the wrongs, as you pointed out, 7 of the last 8 quarters have been pretty good run defense. They just really botched it in the fourth quarter of the Cleveland game. But other than that, they've started to reverse some of the trends. And if they have a strong showing at the end, I think people will look at Weaver and say, well, you know what? You had one hand tied behind your back, given the talent that you were working with, and you actually got better as the season went along. So you can't really ask for much more than that. And maybe it does end up with him here.
Yeah.
I think there's a good chance that Weaver ends up in Tennessee as their defensive coordinator.
I do too. Well, Vrabel wanted him last year when Dean Pease decided to retire, and then when they couldn't get Weaver, Vrabel decided to take over the defense himself, and that has not always worked out this year. The Titans are 8-3, so overall things are working out fine for the Titans. They're leading the division. They beat the Colts yesterday. But yes, Seth, you look at the last 5 games of the season for the Texans, you know, depending on what the Titans are doing in week 17, you know, you got to kind of put that off to the side. If the Titans have already sewn up whatever their seed is going to be, you know, that, and that's a distinct possibility. If Kansas City runs away and hides for the bye, which they're 10-1 right now, they're at least 2 games ahead of everybody else, then it's, you know, that there might not be a reason to go balls to the wall in week 17 for some of these teams that have, you know, say, you know, 3, 4, 5 losses at the time. The Titans could be one of those teams. I say all that to say that the Texans play the Colts this week at home, not a great offensive team. They play the Bears the following week. We saw last night, disaster offensive team, especially if Trubisky is starting. They play the Colts again the following week. I'm assuming it's going to be the same-looking Colts team that they play this week. And then they play the Bengals, who are going to have a backup quarterback playing in Week 16. I mean, this is going to be an opportunity just purely from the schedule easing up. And I think that's a lot of the reason why the defense is probably playing better this last month or so, is that they're not playing Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers and Ben Roethlisberger, Lamar Jackson at the beginning of the year when he was playing better than the Lamar Jackson that we've seen the last couple of weeks. You know, even Minnesota has a lot of weapons out there on the field. Those are the teams they were playing early in the season. the schedule's eased up. The schedule's going to continue to ease up, and I think it's going to. I think if the Texans, provided the key guys stay healthy on defense, I think they're going to continue to improve defensively as the year rolls down.
So, okay, so Weaver gets a pass in a lot of respects. What are people going to think of Tim Kelly when Tim Kelly's looking for work or perhaps interviewing for the job here with whoever the new head coach and general manager?
He may be too attached to O'Brien in some people's minds. You know, to get another offensive coordinator. Do I think he'll work again? Yeah, of course. I mean, these guys all get jobs. But some of them may depend on...
Not necessarily as coordinators.
No. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, I don't think he'll get an OC job. If you're asking me, do I think he'll work next year in the NFL? Possibly. Probably. Do I think he'll be an offensive coordinator? Almost definitely not. Do I think if O'Brien lands somewhere, he winds up coaching with O'Brien again? 100% yes, I do. He winds up... I don't think he'll wind up... Like, if O'Brien gets an NFL job, I don't know that he brings in Tim Kelly to be his offensive coordinator, but I could see him being a tight ends coach again or something like that. Or if he lands in college, I could see him being O'Brien's OC at a college somewhere. I could definitely see that.
If you bring in Bill O'Brien, one of the first questions, after a few warm-up questions to get comfortable with him, he's going to have to be, right, hey, Bill, what is this with you and working with others? And your seeming need for more and more control and your inability to do anything with that control or power once you have it. I'd be really nervous to bring Bill O'Brien into my organization. As a football coach, am I going to expect that he works just fine with any general manager? I mean, Brian Gain was his hand-picked general manager, and he couldn't last a year with him. So what does Bill O'Brien say to those questions? Is he going to admit that he's grown some? Is he going to try to act like he's learned?
Well, the answer is yes, which is why I believe that he needs a year away if he's going to get another NFL job. You know, I know John McClain has said he thinks there's a decent chance that O'Brien gets another head coaching job in 2021. I'd be shocked if he was a head coach in the league in 2021. Do I think he'll be a head coach again in the league someday? Yeah, possibly. I mean, there's a lot of recycling that goes on in the NFL. If he's going to work, if his next job is going to be head coach of an NFL football team, he's got to stay away for a year. And he's got to stay away for a year and find a way to be somewhat public about the rehabilitation of his emotional outbursts, of his just emotional persona. It needs to get leaked out there that, you know, he's traveling around to colleges and watching what some college coaches are doing with some offenses. He's talking to people about trying to get his temper under control. I don't know if you want that out there, that you know, he's taking anger management. I don't know if you want that out there, but I think he wants NFL teams to maybe know that he's working on his temper. There's way too much emotional dirt out there that's still fresh on O'Brien. You know, if it's dirt, it's still mud right now. It's not crusted up dirt that's ready to blow away in the wind. I don't think he works in the NFL next year, not as a head coach. I don't think he goes up to New England and he does some stuff on, you know, he just kind of lays in the weeds on Belichick's staff up there for a year. But he's going to be a head coach again. It's going to be in 2022 in the NFL. Now, some college may look at his personality as a just sort of a tour de force that can pull a program. I don't know if it's true, but I could see an athletic director and a college president getting sold into that.
I like the idea that I'm guessing that Bill Belichick tried to have a conversation with Bill O'Brien before the Patriots game, and maybe Bill O'Brien gave Belichick a bunch of information, and it blew up in his face. And Belichick was like, "What? How the hell is this what you gave me to try to defeat Deshaun Watson? Do you not even know Deshaun Watson yourself?" And O'Brien's kind of like, "Well, I'm just trying to help do right by you as much as I could, you know." And great family, and he's a heck of a guy.
Yeah.
And
finally, the offense.
Relative to different scenarios we'd been in, I thought that might work.
Oh, that's funny. You mentioned Lonnie Johnson's name. Lonnie Johnson was on with DP Sidhu, and she asked him about the position change. Lonnie's been a safety almost exclusively this season, and I thought it was an interesting answer when she asked him about the position, as long as we're talking about the secondary, because we led into this segment talking about Justin Reed. Here is Lonnie Johnson on the position change this year.
I came in, I think, like, since you said, like you said, we had no offseason. So the coaches didn't really get to see, like, all the work that I had put in this offseason at corner. And then once I came in, and I was doing fine at corner, I think so. And I think the coaches seen that too. But once they move me to safety and they seeing like the flashes, they know my aggressiveness. They just know that I'm one of them players like you really don't want to piss off. So, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like the coaches made the right move with it.
All right, so ultimately he feels they made the right move. He's bummed that they didn't see the work he was putting in on cornerback type stuff. Of course, if any of them were on Instagram, they saw it because he was tweeting out pictures of him doing the footwork exercises on a pretty routine basis on social media.
We got to go work with the footwork king there, guy that he was working with, Sean. I want to have the fastest feet in radio.
Now that we're a little lighter, I think I do feel like I might have a decent back pedal, decent hip turn. I feel like my hips aren't as stiff as they used to be.
I got all my intestines back in place after my hernia surgery. I feel like
good.
I was if I just had my intestines in place, I probably could have been like an outside linebacker instead of a nose tackle.
Yeah, you dropping in coverage, that would have been a beautiful thing to see. Lonnie Johnson's had some rough games lately. He's made a few plays here and there. Where do you come out on Lonnie Johnson as an asset that a GM or a head coach might be looking at here?
I think you look at him and you can see, if you look at the good plays and say, hey, what can he do if he can learn this position? It's appetizing to think of him as a safety. I mean, this is again, the disease of versatility that Bill O'Brien would consistently succumb to. He was more in love with guys who could do multiple things mediocre in a mediocre way than having a guy that could do one thing really, really well. So, hey, Lonnie Johnson, we're not sure he can play corner, but maybe he could play safety too. Let's draft him because of it. So you do, and you try to see if he can work out at safety and see what happens over time. Hey, Eric Murray, does anybody else want him as a starter? No, but what they don't realize is that he can be bad as both a safety and a slot corner. Idiots. We're going to have him be our bad slot corner this year. So it all fell into place, right? You needed a slot corner, so you had your safety, Eric Murray, play it because he's supposedly versatile, right? And then you needed a safety to replace that guy, so you've got this guy who's not that good at cornerback and has never played safety, but he can be your safety.
Oh.
It's all working out. God. Bill O'Brien's dream would be to have Eric Murray playing nose guard and have some defensive end back playing free safety because they're all versatile in their scouting report.
I don't know if you saw this. I don't know if you watched Sunday Night Football last night or not. It was not a real fun game to watch unless you were laying 7 with the Packers. It was not a competitive game. The Packers destroyed the Bears. The Packers have this offensive lineman named Elgton Jenkins. He's a young player. I think he's in his second year. And they put this graphic up. I'm going to show it to you right now, Seth.
I've seen it.
Yeah,
I've
you have. Okay, so for those who haven't seen it, it's basically 5 little boxes all next to each other horizontally depicting an offensive line where Elgton Jenkins is standing in each of these 5 boxes because he has taken snaps at literally every position along the offensive line since last season and several snaps. Like right guard is the only position that he's taken just minimal snaps at. The rest of them, he's taken at least a couple hundred snaps, it looks like. He's the only player to play all 5 O-line positions in the league over the last 2 seasons. I saw that graphic. I said O'Brien would trade 2 first-rounders for this guy in a heartbeat. A guy who can play all 5 positions on the offensive line, and I feel like he would have him playing all 5 positions within the same game just because he likes to tinker. Like, hey, Elgton, in this series, you're going to be the right guard. I know you were just snapping 5 minutes ago.
You know, it reminds me a little bit of, David Quisenberry, who first was diagnosed with cancer in June of 2014.
Yep.
Got his first start in an NFL game yesterday for the Tennessee Titans, which was really, really, really cool to see. Because obviously, if you're new to Houston, David Quisenberry was here with the Texans. He was in his second season when he was diagnosed with cancer. So we've known David for a whole long time. But Quisenberry was another guy, I think, that they had – he might have been one of the first Bill O'Brien, hey, let's try him at multiple different spots and see what's going on. But then he got sick real quick. But Quisenberry was part of a really good offensive showing versus the Colts.
He was. He started left – and actually, that's a good place to segue. Let's jump in on some headlines here.
Payne and Pendergast. Today's headlines.
Yeah, just to put a wrap on that one, we're going to rapid fire some NFL stuff here in headlines, Seth. But yeah, David Quisenberry, it's a great story. It's worth leading off headlines with. Started at left tackle for the Titans yesterday in a crucial, crucial game for them. They've, of course, lost their left tackle, Taylor Lewan. And this was a game for to take the lead, to take control of the AFC South. and the Tennessee Titans rolled up the Indianapolis Colts 45-26. And this game was never, I say it was never close. It was 14-14 in the first quarter. But the Titans really took control of this game behind Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown. I mean, those, they have two of the biggest freaks playing skill positions in Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown in the entire league. And these guys waylaid the Indianapolis defense. An Indianapolis defense set that was getting lauded around the league for being one of the best defense. And I still think it's a really good defense. They just didn't have any answers for Tennessee yesterday.
They were also out three starters, including DeForest Buckner, who may or may not be back for the Texans game because he's in the COVID protocol.
He should take his time, I think.
Because he actually tested positive, I believe.
Yes.
Which means then it depends on when his symptoms showed up and whatnot.
Right.
So November 25th was when he tested positive, was put into the protocol. He's got 10 to 14 days after that. So depending on if he's
right
in the short
there.
End of the... That's a big deal. DeForest Buckner is one of the very best defensive linemen in the NFL. And they're down two starting linemen. I think the Texans will get a better version of the Colts defense. The Titans were doing a really good job with their outside zone run. I don't know if the Texans can do it with the same alacrity that the Titans can with Derrick Henry, obviously. But maybe if they can get a little bit of success there, yeah, that could help out a lot.
Texter points out to me, God, what am I thinking? Kansas City, I said earlier, if Kansas City has the one seed, they're 10-1. I completely forgot that Pittsburgh's undefeated.
What about them?
I was talking earlier in this segment about Kansas City being the one seed. Like, you know, the Tennessee maybe resting guys because Kansas City's going to have the one seed. It's going to be I completely forget that Pittsburgh is 10-0 this season. They're the most understated, undefeated team that I can remember 10 weeks into a season.
Because in your mind you're thinking, okay, Kansas City still looks like a better football team.
They
Pittsburgh
do.
Pittsburgh is undefeated, yes. Kansas City, the worst thing you can say about Kansas City right now is they don't seem to be completely devastating opponents the way they were when they were really rolling. And then you forget that, like, oh, okay, it wasn't all roses all year last year. The Kansas City had to scrap it up a little bit at various times, especially when Pat Mahomes was injured.
Yeah.
So that's what you're thinking.
Yeah.
You're thinking in your mental seedings, in your power rankings, Kansas City's number one in the Steelers.
It's the gambler in me just pushing the actual standings of wins and losses to the side. Yes, the Steelers are undefeated right now. And they deserve a lot of credit. Next headline, Deshaun Watson and the Texans got Matt Patricia fired and Bob Quinn, the general manager of the Detroit Lions, both fired on Saturday following an embarrassing loss at home to the Texans on Thanksgiving Day. And Seth, you know what? It's probably not just that flea flicker where the Detroit brass looked at each other after that flea flicker where the Texans went up 41-17 and said, okay, it's time. It's that it was Thanksgiving Day. You're the Lions. You don't have many traditions if you're the Lions. Certainly not a tradition of success in the postseason. If you're the Lions, there's very little that you have that you can hold on to and say, this is Detroit Lions football. This is our tradition. Thanksgiving morning, the 11:30 Central Time game is one of those things. And the Texans waltzed into your stadium with a 3-7 record and completely embarrassed you. That's last straw kind of stuff. And because Deshaun Watson was able to play a huge role in getting Matt Patricia fired, Detroit fans are donating money to Deshaun Watson's charity. That's the new thing that fans do when there's a player that does a solid for your team. You donate to their charity. Now, personally, I'd like to see them be a little bit looser with the purse strings than they are. You know, they're not doing what Buffalo fans did for Andy Dalton when he helped the Bills get into the playoffs a few years ago. They donated six figures to the guy's charity. Lions fans aren't
like
even
$430,000.
Yes,
not just six figures.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, lots
Big
of six figures.
Right. Yeah, Lions fans not so,
so they're
much.
They're up. They're up to a little over $1,000.
$1,000! They just got to four figures.
Well, you know, I mean, do you really want them to celebrate a coach's demise as much as the Bills celebrated actually making the playoffs?
This coach? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
This coach.
They felt awesome about it.
He's horrible.
Yeah, the Lions are... Boy, by the way, we didn't talk about this last week after the game. Why do the Lions deserve to play on Thanksgiving every single year? I'd say we need to strip them from, at the very least. Now, I guess make it an NFC North team or something. Keep that black and blue division feel to it. But it doesn't have to be the Lions every damn year. How about you flex it and do whoever the best NFC North team is that year they play on Thanksgiving?
They should. You know what, Seth? I'm a huge fan of relegation that they do, like over in soccer, over in Europe. Like, you know, relegation where you can get bumped down to a lower league if your team isn't good enough, and you can play up and get, you know, the equivalent I think people think of if they did it over here would be in the NBA to prevent tanking. It would be really cool if you finish in the bottom four in the NBA, all of a sudden your team's in the G League next year, and the four G League teams get bumped up. That's what relegation is. You can't really do that in the NFL or in professional sports here because of how the TV contracts work. But one little mini relegation, you're right. It would be good if you could get relegated off of Thanksgiving Day. The Lions should be relegated off of Thanksgiving Day, and they should give it to the Packers.
How do they get away with it over there and still make money? I've always been fascinated by that when teams get relegated down.
Yeah, I've been reading up on it. I've been
fascinated enough that I've never read a single thing about it. But otherwise, I've been fascinated. I've always been curious about that.
Actually been reading a book about Real Madrid, if you can believe that, which is the most successful sports franchise in the world. It's called The Real Madrid Way. And I've been reading that, and the teams over there, they don't operate with a salary cap or luxury tax or anything like that. They're all independent businesses that can spend as much as they want on their players, which is kind of cool because then that gives them incentive to run their business side very, very fan-friendly. You know, the more money you make, the more money you can go spend on players. You know, it's that simple. I don't know if that somehow ties into how relegation works or doesn't work. You know, like I don't know how the TV contracts work over there. But the organizations run much more independently over there than they do here, where the NFL are really 32 interdependent franchises of the same overall enterprise. You know what I mean?
Well, do those teams ever move cities? I guess obviously Real Madrid isn't going to change. Maybe there's just more of actual pride in the city involved in those teams versus in the NFL where teams can up and move.
Well, they're actual clubs. That's the thing. Like all those teams are kind of like the Packers, where there's a lot of shareholders and club members and things like that. Not to get too deep in European soccer, but I think that's probably a reason why.
Wade Smith pointed out the story about, you know, the Lions owner there that shared the same name as Jim Nance's father-in-law was the guy who came up with the idea. That's where I just don't care. I don't care who came up with the idea.
Statue
you lose that right after several. You know what? That's part of the estate tax these days. if your daddy came up with something, fine, you get to keep it, but you have to pay the tax, which is field a competitive football team.
That's right. That's right.
Like the Fords don't have enough. Sorry, Ford family. Right. That's not enough. Not enough in your family right now. You have to go without.
So there is an opening in Detroit now for a general manager and a head coach. There's also an opening in Jacksonville for a general manager, and I would guess pretty soon a head coach. So let's pretend that Doug Marrone is not long for this world. Seth, Texans, Falcons, Jags, and Lions. Where do the Texans stack up right now? And it may depend on what spot it is you're looking for, GM or head coach.
For GM or head coach, you're right, yeah, GM or head coach would be the question. I still think just because of Deshaun Watson, the Texans are the top one there. The Jaguars are a more appetizing destination than I think people might realize. They have two first-round picks. They have two second-round picks. They've got a whole boatload of cap space. And they have an owner who's shown that he is willing to spend, and he's willing to be very, very patient. David Caldwell was there forever. I don't think there's much pressure at all to win immediately there. Because if anything, Shad Khan, the owner for the Jaguars, his problem is almost that he's too patient. You could say the same thing about the Lions at times. They've been too patient, like with Matt Millen. But I think Deshaun Watson trumps everything. It's just so hard. Sean, think about this. You could say, well, yeah, but you can go out and find a franchise quarterback. Oh, you mean like the way the 49ers did?
Right.
And there are constantly discussions about whether Jimmy Garoppolo is the long-term answer or not. It's just that hard. No matter how much draft capital you have, the chances of you finding a Deshaun Watson are basically less than one in a decade. You could take that job in Jacksonville, and maybe once in a decade you'll find a quarterback as good as Deshaun Watson. If you like those odds, then by all means, go for it. Or you could just step in and take the Deshaun Watson right now.
Yeah, they could have done that in 2017 with the fourth overall pick. They chose Leonard Fournette instead. Boy, they went through David Caldwell's history with first round picks in an article that I read. He's the anti-Rick Smith. Holy crap. That guy's done a poor job in the first round of the draft. He's gone now. Seth, that music means one thing. Antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you, and hopefully no Aaron Brockovich is in the organization watching your face mask usage.
That would be rats. That would be whistleblowers. All right, we're done. We're going to hand it over to John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. We're back at 6 a.m. Have a great day, everybody. Enjoy.
Do me a favor. Just kind of sit up.
I know you guys can't see me, but f*** that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.